Welcome to Political Point of View on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM. In this program, we talk with politicians of all types, of all sorts, from local government through to central government, and including aspiring candidates. Sit back and enjoy.
And on Political Point of View this week, I am joined from the Levin Morgue studio on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM by the Two Horizons representatives from Hora Whenua, Emma Clark and Sam Ferguson. How are you both this morning?
Kia ora, good morning.
Good morning, Oliver. I'm great, thank you.
I'm sure you've been a bit busy in the few weeks leading up to Christmas. Been a bit hectic this morning, I understand, Emma.
Yes, yeah, it has been a bit hectic. A wee incident on State Highway where a bus has collided with one of our tractors, but thankfully everyone is all right, although in a real state of shock. So.
Well, that's always good because you can never know what happens with those larger vehicles, the buses and trucks and things.
Exactly, yeah, so thank the Lord.
Sam, it's a bit wet this morning. Did you come on your bike?
No, I'm off to Wellington after this, so I'm in the car.
Perfect. Now, as we said, we're coming up to Christmas, so I suppose some things are winding down, but what's happened since we last spoke? It's been a while since we spoke, 6 weeks ago.
A lot of long-term plan conversations and workshops, really getting down into the nitty-gritty. I think we've analysed paragraphs and statements in the hope that the general public are actually going to read it word for word, but we've been very cognizant of the fact that it needs to be in sort of plain English, and trying to be as transparent and as open as possible in what we've got planned and what the alternatives and options are for ratepayers to submit on.
Actually, just thinking a couple of key things that have happened over the last few months that listeners might be interested in is we have voted that all of our public meetings will be live streamed, so that's from next year. And we've also voted that by default our workshops will be open to the public, and in the past they haven't been. So those are some changes coming in the new year, and that's just about continuing around transparency and taking the public on those, because like the long-term plan, there's a lot of really detailed conversations, and the workshops are a great place for those people that may be interested in what we're actually discussing. It's just opening that up to the community.
And that's quite good as well, because many of the local councils, particularly the one here in Hora Whenua, they do that by default anyway. I think some of the committees, the subcommittees, do that as well. So is there a plan for that going forward, or is it just baby steps at this stage?
So our decision is that we've already got our... All of our committees are open, effectively, but that's what will be live-streamed, and certainly because we're such a big region. So like the Transport Committee that Emma and I are both on, that's open to the public and going to be live-streamed going forward. The workshops, I think we have 20 to 30 workshops a year, and they'll be open to the public but not live-streamed.
And they'll also be recorded, and that information or recording can be gained on request if someone has... They had their interest piqued in some way, they can go back and request that from a later date as well. So they don't actually necessarily have to sit in there for all the detail. And workshops can be rather long and drawn out. So it's a really good way. You can sit at home, listen to the audio, pick out what you want, and delete the rest. So I think it's a really good step forward in terms of transparency. Though I would admit I can't imagine there's going to be too many people on the workshop front, but I think on the public transport there is, and it's the one committee that hadn't been live streamed, and there tends to be the most interest from the public in public transport.
Oh, absolutely, especially in Levin's case at the moment with the road going through and the bus services, the Capital Connection, both being on the transport committee. Any updates for our listeners on that?
Well, yeah, in terms of the Capital Connection, we're certainly progressing. That's a big project. It's a long project. There's legal requirements we have to meet as well. But I said earlier, I'm off to Wellington. We're having a requirements workshop for the Capital Connection. And so that's working alongside other community groups about what we want the train, what the function and the form of the train will look like. And we're still continuing with the Hora Whenua Transport Review. And that's about buses for Levin and Hora Whenua, but we're not ready. We haven't landed on anything yet, but we'll be going out to the public next year with a couple of options.
And there's money set aside at this stage in the LTP, so if you are interested in public transport for the Horowhenua, this, you know, get involved and submit on that, because it would be nice to actually have that strengthened a little bit, but we're going to need some real public support in order to get that across the line.
Emma, you said, I'm not sure if it was in the last show or the show before that, when we talked about public transport systems with buses, you said build it and the people will come. Do you think that's something that Horizons will do in the next couple of years, or are you quite reliant on that public feedback?
No, I think Horizons is going to build it and the people will come, especially under Sam's stewardship as chair of the Public Transport Committee. It's had some real vigour, and we had nearly 900 submissions in the regional transport plan, and that's the highest of any consultation Horizons has ever done. So I think there's a real mandate for us to go out and do it. Palmerston North is getting a huge investment and a change in how they're doing the routes. So in terms of frequency, the buses going all electric, Whanganui and the Tide has been hugely successful, you know, over 200% plus growth. So yeah, I think it's something that we're, I know Sam and I are both quite committed to, but we also, it really helps when the public reinforces that our vision is the correct one.
Yeah, it's just, it's continuing to be connected with the community in terms of what we're pushing for, that we've got the support from the community. And not everyone is supportive of some of these visions. So the more from the community of saying, yes, this is what we want, it helps get these things over the line.
On the Capital Connection with this workshop later today, what are some of the things that you envisage will come from this? What are you advocating for, besides it happening, of course?
Yeah, so there's a few specific things. If you are a Capital Connection user, you'll know that there's a refurbished train that was rolled out a few months ago, and there's no baggage carriers by the seats. There's baggage racks by the doors now. So, I mean, that's a small thing, but the feedback I've heard is that makes it difficult. If you've just got a small bag, there's not necessarily anywhere to put it. So the idea of being able to put your bag up above your seat, that's just one example. I know another contentious one, and certainly heard this from Mayor Grant Smith in Palmerston North, is the current Capital Connection has a servery, and the wider upper services don't have a servery. So that's where you can purchase some food or a glass of wine or beer. And so at this point, none of the new trains will have serveries on board. And I know that there's some real concern from existing users about that one.
So we're kind of talking like a food car or like a dinner carriage type thing, really.
Well, not quite a dinner carriage, but it's just a
tuck shop on the train.
Tuck shop on the train.
That serves wine. It's my favourite kind of tuck shop.
That sounds quite cool, yeah. That name. That's what you should... Have you thought about branding it as that, the tuck shop on the train?
Wow, that's a great idea. Yeah. Well, at this point, we won't have one to brand. So that's an open conversation.
Well, it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it, right?
There's a cost that comes with it, obviously. So when we're building 18 trains, and if they all have a tuck shop on them, you lose seats, you need all the wiring, electricals and everything for a setup like that. So there is a real cost. So it's not that we can just put it there and hope that it will work. We need to be confident that it's the right decision. So that's where there's a range of views on this one.
It certainly enhances the user experience for those who are not using the train as a pure commuting tool. For those of us who just want to check on our kids and go down to Wellington, for example, for a bit of a day out, to be able to have a snack, feed the kids, have a glass of wine on the way back. Absolutely lovely, enhances the experience. But yeah, seems that there is a real commercial cost to having them. And hopefully they can find some middle ground. You know, some of the trains at certain parts of the day may have the tuck shop. The ones in between may not.
It's quite good when you get on the Air New Zealand plane and they offer you the free cookie.
Or the fudge.
The fudge?
Yes. Yeah, during the evening flight, you get a piece of fudge. It's really good.
Really? That's quite cool. I heard they changed their menu anyway, so who knows what's going to be on that going forward. Moving on to something else which the Horizons Council have been doing, there's some water quality targets which are being set. You've got some workshops and a roadshow. Do you want to tell us about that?
The roadshows have all been completed now, but that's a big piece of work, and I think we've touched on some of it previously, but it's ultimately a directive from the previous government around freshwater standards right across the country, and so that's resulted in a lot of work for Horizons, going through planning and working with stakeholders and community groups. And under the current rules, we Horizons, have to notify a plan change, which is a legal process under the Resource Management Act, by the end of next year. and that's a really aggressive time frame. And there's uncertainty for various reasons, but one of the big reasons is the new government have signalled they're going to make some changes there, but we don't know what those changes will look like. So we're in a bit of a, not quite a holding pattern, but yeah, just a challenge.
Yeah, certainly a rock and a hard place to be, because it commits a lot of financial resources as well as a lot of staff time, energy. There's a lot of anxiety out there, especially in our rural communities, in terms of where the limits have been set and for those to be achieved, what the consequences are. So the sooner we can get some direction, clear direction out of central government on this, the better, because otherwise we are literally, potentially wasting ratepayer money and community goodwill as we roll this out.
And time as well.
And time. Yeah. And time is money.
Of course. So with the new central government, have you worked out, because Horizons is obviously very multifaceted, have you worked out who you have to go to for what yet?
I think there is plans afoot for the who's who in the hood to have a meet and greet in Wellington, and that will be really good. I think the regional sector, which is the sort of leadership group for all regional councils, etc., are really pushing central government to get some clarity on a number of things, because it's not just freshwater. It's, you know, the MPS for biodiversity, land use. There's a whole raft of things that has been signalled could change, but the wheels are already in motion, so we really need those to land firmly in the new year.
So Simeon Brown, Minister for Transport and Minister for Local Government, is certainly a key player for local government going forward.
Good starting point, I guess.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's been around for a while. He certainly knows how government works, and he's got his relationships, and the sector have relationships with him. So, I mean, over the coming months, we'll start to get clarity on some of the detail of their direction and what that means for us.
Looking at this roadshow, which has concluded in the last couple of weeks, I assume you were both at the one in Levin. How did that go? What was the response like there?
By the sounds of it, ours may have been more one of the more diplomatic and respectful roadshows occurred throughout the region.
Well, that's good for the Horowhenua, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I think, make no bones about it, there is some real tension in the rural community at the moment over this freshwater plan change.
Of course.
And it has left people quite emotional. And our staff have had to, as a consequence, be put in some sort of really uncomfortable sort of public positions. And it was really nice in the Horowhenua to see it. It was super respectful. Mm. Views heard on both sides, staff allowed to speak, really good questions asked, and really good engagement across. And we in Levin had not just only rural stakeholders, but we also had iwi, we had people very interested in the Hokio community and how the lake is, etc. So it was, yeah, it was a well-rounded presentation and yeah, well-received, I think.
Mm. I'd certainly acknowledge there is angst and there's uncertainty. There are companies, people, families that have their livelihood invested in farming and producing food, and the future is unclear, and that creates uncertainty, and out of that can come emotion, and that's not a bad thing. On the other side is people that are hugely passionate about our fresh water quality and having Lake Horowhenua on our doorstep. That's a constant reminder around the challenges that we do face, and trying to navigate that in a public space can be tough sometimes. And so, yeah, it was a respectful meeting, a respectful conversation. We don't know what the next year or two is going to look like. And I guess for me, it's certainly trying to maintain those respectful conversations. We don't have to always agree with each other, but we can still show respect to each other, even if we do have different views and opinions.
Sure. And coming away from that meeting, were you satisfied that the farmers and the food producers and the members of the community that were very concerned about the lake, for example, and the freshwater quality, do you think they're satisfied coming away from the meetings? They got the right answers from Horizons?
No, not at all. And unfortunately, we have had to go out with this stage of the engagement because of the tight timeframes without the economic impact assessment. And that is one thing that has been a constant from every meeting is what are the social and economic impacts of this. And once we've got that information, we can come back out and re-engage with communities. I think then we're going to have a probably even a more emotive conversation, but at least then we've got the whole package. At the moment, we just have this utopia of what we might want to achieve without what the actual consequences are from a social and economic point of view.
It's a journey. So this was an update of where it's at the moment, but there's questions that haven't been answered, and that's acknowledged.
Sure. So just so our listeners are fully up to date with what this is, what are some of these freshwater targets and other aspects of water quality that you're talking about, that you're looking at?
At a fundamental level, it's about our rivers and our lakes and our streams being able to support biodiversity and be safe for human recreation. I mean, that's the fundamental targets. I mean, there's a bit more detail around that, but then it's about what does that mean locally? Where are we at in terms of the state of water bodies? How far are they from those targets? And what would need to change to reach those targets? And that's where there's a lot of science behind it, but as Emma said, there's also economic impacts and societal impacts of making changes to achieve those targets.
So all those limits that have been set on a set of modelling, and the modelling as it's first done across the country is as good as the science right now, and that will only improve as we go on this journey. So there is some uncertainty in that modelling, and that makes people uneasy too, but I feel like it's an absolute process, and that modelling will get more and more refined over the next sort of, you know, 5, 10, 20 years. But the limits are set from 2017. So under the MPS for fresh water, any water quality level at 2017, it cannot get worse than. So the bar has to be raised from there. And it's done in bands of A, B, C, D, with D obviously being what you didn't want on your report card when you came home from school. And it's been very interesting to see where those bands are currently, and that the absolute level we need to get it to is quite a jump in a lot of places, and that's what's causing the angst, because we are talking about it's going to be intergenerational to make some of these changes. This is not happening in a decade, it's not happening in 2 decades. You are talking 50, 60, 100 years to get some of this water quality back to where we seemingly want it right now, where the values and the limits have been set now. So that's a massive paradigm shift for a lot of places.
Yeah, just looking at some of the rivers on the map, and the quality seems to be at about the same level as everywhere else in the region. Do you both have a particular goal ahead of everyone else? You want the cleanest rivers in the region, or do you have any sort of thing in mind?
Right now, I just want to get through this process with the least amount of tears and blood on the floor. I think it's too soon to have hugely aspirational goals. I think there's still quite a bit of science to be done. But it would be really neat to see some of the E. coli levels come down. It would be neat to see some of the sediment in that, in some particular river systems, lessened. And it would be great to be able to have a summer, for example, where Wairarapa Beach isn't being inundated or closed down with E. coli, you know. So those, you know, are probably my own personal goals. But I really just want to get to the end of this with some good outcomes. And what those outcomes specifically are is still yet to be decided.
I guess I can talk a little about some of my personal aspirations and goals around water quality. And I mean, that was one of the big reasons why I put my name forward for Horizons in the first place, seeing the state of our water right across the region and what that means for people and for our biodiversity. That's still my aspiration, that we can, in summer, we can safely take the kids swimming and know that there's not a risk of getting sick, and that our rivers are thriving and rivers and lakes are thriving and supporting biodiversity. And I guess that's my aspiration, and that's come through from so much of the community of, well, of course we want those things. The challenge is, how do we get those things? And that's not an easy one to answer, because I mean, for various reasons, if we look back over the previous 150 years, the government has really given, society has given clear direction that we clear our land, we clear all of the trees, we establish farming everywhere, And so it's actually where we are as a result of centuries of decision making to get us in this direction. So it's not, can't just pull a lever and change everything. And that, yeah, that's the challenge of those environmental aspirations versus how we've set everything up.
As we are in the last month of the year and we are getting close to Christmas, are you going to be having any more meetings or workshops before you, I guess, shut up shop?
Yes, we've got one more on the 13th of December. And then we are on, well, Christmas leave for some of us, not myself personally, until the 30th of January. So, yeah, and then we really hit the ground running with the LTP. So it's where the rubber hits the road, where we finalise the draft consultation, and then Sam and I will have a list of dates and times you can meet up with us, I am sure, somewhere around the region in the district, and yeah, go through your concerns, your aspirations, and we'll be there to help you make your submissions if need be.
Sounds wonderful. When do you actually shut up shop at the end of this year? What's the date?
Well, from a governance perspective, our last meeting is Wednesday, the 13th of December. But, I mean, Horizons as an organisation, I mean, continues.
Right through Christmas. Right,
well, in the whole, yeah. So, I mean, things like the pollution hotline, that's still available. The emergency management function, if a rain event comes or any emergency disaster. The buses are still running. Shut up shop, not entirely.
Not really, it's just more the your function, I suppose, yeah. Of Horizons.
Yeah.
All the essential functions keep ticking over.
Yeah, I think the staff appreciate when the governance shuts down for a bit. They can actually get on with their job.
Yeah. Is that when they are most productive, are they?
I suspect.
Yes. Very invested council this term in terms of delving down in quite a lot of not only governance but operational as well. So I think the staff will appreciate the break from the governance team.
Of course. And coming into Christmas, you two personally, do you have any plans? Where are you going? What are you doing?
While people are eating, we're working. So we have Christmas Day off, and that's it, and New Year's Day.
I'm camping and tramping. So off to Hāhei, and doing the Kepler, and in the Tararua Ranges for a bit of tramping.
So out in nature.
That's the one.
Any Travers Land snail?
Yeah.
They're very good at hiding.
Fair enough. So tell me, Emma, you've got Christmas Day and New Year's Day off, so you've got 2 days. Mm-hmm. What are the plans on those 2 days?
Family. So, yeah, we have finally managed to move back into our farmhouse, and I'm really excited to have our first Christmas back there in 3 years, and family and extended family around, so probably about 15 people. So it'll be good.
Anything on Christmas Day for you, Sam?
I'll be down in Paraparumu for Christmas Day with a big gathering, yes.
Wonderful. Last episode of the year, last question for you two for the year before we invite you back next year, because our listeners do like listening to you and what goes on in regional council. No soap in my mouth this time. Anything you'd like to say before we let you go?
I think I'd just say travel safely, because our roads will be busy. Every time we have a death or a serious injury on our roads, a family is impacted. So, yeah, travel safely out there.
Yeah, I can't emphasise that enough, especially after this morning's incident. So travel safe, and remember, it's a time for giving. It's not just about materialistic things. It's actually about time with the people that you love and care for. And those in our community who might be a bit isolated, you know, if you can take a minute out of your day just to say hello, be fantastic. Thank you.
Well said.
Great message to end on. Thank you very much for your company this year, and thank you very much for keeping our region updated on all the things going on with Horizons. Not everyone understands what goes on within regional council, as you would both certainly know more than most, but thank you both for coming in. Emma Clark, Sam Ferguson, the two Horizons representatives from the Horowhenua on the regional council. Merry Christmas to both of you two.
Merry Christmas, Oliver. Thank you.
And Happy New Year.
And you've been listening to Political Point of View. We'll see you next year.
You have been listening to Political Point of View on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM. In this program, we've talked with politicians of all types, of all sorts, from local government through to central government, and including aspiring candidates.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.